Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com, for faith, fellowship, and love. What are you doing this Lent? The St. Paul Center is streaming their newest video Bible study for free, starting Ash Wednesday. Based on Scott Hahn's renowned covenantal theology, this is a study no one should miss. Invite your friends, Catholic or not. Don't miss your chance to see this premium study for free. Go to stpaulcenter.com to sign up today. Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, a Catholic book blogger. Today with us, we have Christine Watkins. She's a popular Catholic speaker and author. She's formerly an anti-Christian atheist living a life of sin. She began a life of service to the Catholic Church after miraculous healing from Jesus through Mary, which saved her from death. Before her conversion, she danced professionally with the San Francisco Ballet Company. Today, she has 20 years of experience as a Catholic speaker, retreat leader, spiritual director, and counselor. For 10 of those years, she worked as a hospice grief counselor, and for another 10, as a post-abortion healing director. Christine has hosted her own shows on Radio Maria and for Shalom World Television. Today, we'll be discussing her book, Of Men and Mary, How Six Men Won the Greatest Battles of Their Lives. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Thank you.
So I want to start out, Christine, with this is a rather unique book. It's a powerful book, one that I would highly recommend people read. How did you come to write this particular book?
Over the last 8 years, I came across these stories of men that blew me away. And when I came across them in varied ways, I got up the courage to approach these men and say, you know, would you be open to having your story in a book? And lo and behold, they all said yes. And so I began a process either over the internet or over the phone or in person of just interviewing them and putting their stories together. And I'm really thrilled about how it turned out, because all these conversions are happening and hope going into men and women's hearts. And so, yeah, the book of Men and Mary is taking off faster and bigger than I ever imagined.
Yeah, I got to tell you, from reading it, what amazing stories. And we'll get into them as we spend time together today. So I have to ask, is there any particular reason you focused on men in this book? Because, again, you know, guys out there listening, you need to read these stories. Very, very powerful.
I should say, before I forget, where people can find it, there's a website. It's called Queen of Peace Media, and the actual website for it is www.queenofpeacemedia.com. That's where you find it and can see the book trailer and see the faces of the men in the book. And basically, I did choose men only for the book, because I think men and women need to see what happens in the heart. The deepest part of the heart of a man is so beautiful. And Our Lady comes in and touches the heart of a man like no one else can, no other person can. And as a mother, she comes in to the most lost, the most hardened, the most crazy men and sees this gem, sees this saint in this crusty, with this crusty exterior, and starts to break open this crust. And what I love about this story is because these men are so beautiful. And I don't think that other men and women, when they look at a man, necessarily see a man that way. They might think, oh, he's annoying, or oh, he has sexual troubles, or oh, he's too this or too that, right? Mm-hmm. What I think we need to do as people is see each other through the eyes of God. And I think seeing these stories help this, because we've got a murderer, a convicted murderer who deserved to be in prison. We've got a man who's just torturing his wife and doing all sorts of crazy things. We have so many different men in this book, and Mary sees him and says, I love him. I love him, and I'm going to help save him. And then what you get to see is them transform. And I think if we love people, or we try to, we can't ever, you know, we're not perfect, and we can't love like Mary loves. But if we can put our hope and our trust in God and love men the way they need to be loved, as women, we're going to see more conversions. And as men, they're going to find more hope within mm-hmm. themselves and find out who they really are.
Absolutely. So you alluded to it a little bit, but how did you stumble upon these stories? And are there more out there that maybe there'll be another book of this nature?
With God, all is possible. to go through the book, so Father Michael Leitner, we both spoke at the same conference together. Same with Father Rick Wendell. We were both speakers at the same conference. And when we each heard each other's stories, both of our eyes bulged forward. let's see. And then Deacon David Leatherby turned out to be a friend of mine. I met him in Sacramento here. Father Paul Caporali has since died. Oh my gosh, his story was such a saint from the beginning, actually, a man truly after Our Lady's heart. I met him when I spoke at a conference with him. Same thing. The most interesting way that I met someone is Chris Watkins. We met online. He lives in New Zealand. And over 10 years ago, we noticed, I was looking for a story of a man who became chaste after a lot of sexual troubles. And I found him online, and my name is Christine Watkins, and he's Chris Watkins. And then that was just the first of many coincidences. So we've become close friends, never spoken on the phone, never seen each other. We're an email pals. So Jim Jennings, he is the convicted murderer. And I saw him speak online at a Medjugorje conference and was floored and got in contact with him and his wife. So that's how all of the stories came about.
So there's a common theme running through each of those stories. Actually, there's two, but the biggest one is it's Mary. And if there's one thing this book does really good, it's that no one's ever really lost, I think. It points that out. We're never really lost as long as we're open to change. And sometimes Mary might smack you up alongside the head to get your attention. And that's why I think your book is so relevant today, and especially in light of how society is today. So that leads me to ask this question. How can Mary help us in light of the things going on in our world today?
So the world and the church, let's be honest, are a collective mess. but the good news is that Mary is not. And where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. So God is sending Mary to us through different apparition sites and directly into our hearts. I'm a product of Mary. I was a lost soul, an anti-Catholic atheist on my way to hell, who was saved because Mary asked Jesus to save me, and I was going to die. I was terminally ill. So I believe that God is sending her and that there's more mercy, more grace than there ever has been in the history of humanity, because we've never been in such a dark place. So God responds because he's so loving and merciful that he says, okay, you're living in a time where it's never been easier for a soul to go to hell. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it so that there's never been a time that's been easier for a soul to go straight to heaven, to be a saint. And so the hope is to really lean on Mary and say, you know what, Mary, your intercession is so powerful and God's mercy is so powerful right now. And he has ordained that if we just open our hearts a mite, you're going to do the rest. You're going to swoop in and do amazing things. So there's tremendous hope like never before. And I think if we do what Mary is asking, in all of her recent apparitions in history, she's asking for some primary things: frequent reception of the Eucharist. She's asking for frequent confession about once a month. She's asking for fasting. In Fatima, she's asked for penance, penance, penance. And in La Salette, she asked for that. And in Medjugorje, where she's allegedly been appearing since 1981, and the church has never been more supportive of it than the church is today, with allowing diocesan pilgrimages and conferences and such, and the Pope sending Archbishop Hozer as his representative to Medjugorje, and the commission that studied it almost unanimously saying that the first 7 days of the apparitions were real and authentic. So we have Mary in Medjugorje saying that we need to fast on bread and water on Wednesdays and Fridays. She says, my dear children, you have forgotten that with prayer and fasting, you can ward off wars, suspend natural laws. And don't we need that? We need the demons that we have in our world today are the kind that, as scripture says in Mark chapter 9, that can only come out with prayer and fasting. Mm. And another thing, if you look at scripture, Jesus says in the Gospel of Matthew, he says, when you fast, do not fast like the hypocrites. And I think we forget those three little words. And it's not if you might consider the possibility of fasting one day, only if you feel like it. It's when you fast. So he's assuming that we're fasting. And that, I mean, the apostles fasted. I mean, you look at Jesus before his public ministry, right? 40 days of fasting. Moses, before he received the Ten Commandments, the first disciples, the apostles, they would fast before big decisions. And it's no different today. If we want to see the massive conversions, if we want to see that, we have to fast. And so she also said, Mary of Medjugorje said, everyone but the sick must fast. Mm. And I know what all you listeners are thinking. I hope I get sick. It's hard. I mean, when I first started, you know, I'd say, oh, today I'm going to fast on bread and water. And by the end of the day, I was fasting on mint chip ice cream. You know, it's not easy, but the fruits are tremendous. I don't know if you want to, I'm getting off track, but I just heard a woman who read the book and decided to start fasting for her son. And she just gave me a testimony of what happened to her son. It's so exciting. I could give testimony after testimony of the conversions, but it's pretty much doing what she's asking. So she also asked for Bible reading and praying every day, especially the rosary. So the five, she says, these are the five stones that David threw at Goliath. These are what she's giving us to defeat the enemy in our times. So it's daily prayer with the heart, especially the rosary, going to Eucharist frequently, confession once a month, Bible reading, and fasting on bread and water on Wednesdays and Fridays. And if you have a gluten allergy like I do, you choose something else.
And there you go. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at some of these stories of the men in the book that Christine has included. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
Do you wish there was a more practical way to live your faith in the midst of a busy life? Best-selling author and National Catholic Register columnist Patty McGuire Armstrong created what she calls Holy Hacks to help. This fun and fast-paced book is full of concrete tips for living the faith right where you are. with about 200 simple and creative ways to grow in holiness, you can find something to help engage your faith and grow in Christ every day. Check out Holy Hacks at AveMariaPress.com or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. With us today is Christine Watkins, and we're going through her book of Men and Mary, How Six Men Won the Greatest Battle of Their Lives. And Christine, you start off with the story of Father Michael Leitner. I was wondering if you'd give us an overview of his story.
So Michael Leitner, he was raised in a very Catholic family, and he resented everything supposedly being shoved down his throat, as many teenagers do. And so he'd get passive aggressive and doze off during their evening rosary and such. And when it came time to go off to college, he thought, freedom! And he had girlfriends and became a bouncer at a rock club. And he had a dream for himself. And he wanted to be a professional football player. And that wasn't a pipe dream, because at age 14, he was about 286 pounds, 6 foot three, something like that. I mean, my kid is 100 pounds. Michael could sit on him and not know he had done so. And so that's all he ever wanted. And he got into some drug use. And when he came back from college for a Thanksgiving break and was taking a nap, he woke up to a bag of his own marijuana dangling over his head, with his sister sitting on the side of the bed and his mom, who was a Medjugorje devotee and always traveling there, crying. And his sister said, "Busted." Now, the mother had always wanted her family to travel to Medjugorje, and she was falling in love with God, the church, and the Blessed Mother even more because of it. And so the sister said, "Hey, now you have to go to Medjugorje." And he said, "Heck no, I ain't going." And his mother said, "Yes, you are." And his mother won the fight, and they end up in Medjugorje. And she said, "Son, there's only one thing I ask of you while you're here, that you go to confession. If not for you, if not for God, then for me." And he agreed, and he's in the confessional, huge guy in this tiny confessional, and he thinks, "I'm going to make this priest's ears bleed." So he thinks he can shock the priest, and wasn't able to by all of his sins. And the priest, when he said the words of absolution, Michael felt a presence in the room, in the little tiny confessional. And suddenly, this man who could bench press 400 pounds was with his knees in front of him and his calves tucked underneath him. His upper body was thrust back suddenly at a 30-degree angle, and his head hit the back of the confessional, and he was frozen, absolutely immobile. He couldn't move a muscle. And then he felt a spiritual spear dive into his heart, and when it was yanked out, all his sins were yanked out, and it was a painful release. And he walked out of that confessional, went into St. James Church in Medjugorje, and then was suspended in ecstasy for about 20 minutes, where he said, "The greatest high, the greatest joy, the greatest pleasure I ever felt was nothing compared to what I was experiencing in those 20 minutes." Mm. So you can imagine that his life wasn't the same after that. And his mother said, "Okay, would after they got home, would you like to go again 6 months later?" And this time he said, "Absolutely." So they go again, and Michael ends up at a healing service in a nearby town where Medjugorje pilgrims used to go. And priests were praying over pilgrims, and this one priest was kneeling before a woman in a wheelchair whose spinal cord had been severed from a car accident 6 months earlier, and spinal meningitis had set in. So the lower half of her body was completely atrophied. There's no way she could walk. Her legs were the circumference of Michael's wrist. And he was a catcher. People were being slain in the spirit, getting healings, and all sorts of beautiful things are happening. And he was helping out. And he was sitting next to this woman thinking, "Okay, this is pointless. Why is this priest spending so much time?" And he wanted to leave, but he felt God the Father making him stay there. And he couldn't leave this scene of this priest praying over and over again over this woman in the wheelchair. And so he's fed up and full of arrogance and prays flippantly, "What, Lord, what do you want? Do you want me to pray for this woman?" And there was silence. And he said, "Well, then I will. Get her up out of her wheelchair. Show us your power." And then he heard God speak. And he heard the words, "Michael, if I get this woman up and make her walk, will you enter the seminary?" And he said, "Absolutely not." And then 20 minutes pass, and he's squirming, he's agonizing. He's got this, at this point, he has an NFL career ahead of him. He's 2 years away from entering the draft. He's like, "Oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not giving up my dream." But finally, his heart warms a little, and he thinks to himself, "Well, it would be kind of cool to see her get up and walk." But he decided to change the rules. So he said, "Okay, Father, if you get her up out of her wheelchair and walk her around this entire church, then I'll enter the seminary." In 5 seconds, she's up on her feet without anyone telling her to do so. She grabs the back of her wheelchair and she starts taking a walk around the church. And Michael's thinking, "Why are you doing this? Somebody stop her. Somebody tackle her." So he's wandering in desperation at this point. And then he's just changes the deal again. And he says, okay, if she doesn't step on that tile in the front of the church, I'm not going." And the woman comes to the front of the church. She plants both feet on that very tile and then plops back down in her seat. So there was the calling.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple of funny things about that story. One is we often put these benchmarks in front of God like he can't achieve those. Father Michael did it a number of times in that story with just the lady in the wheelchair.
Yeah. He's like, "Well, how about this? How about that? How about the other thing?"
Right. And the other thing, and I don't want to pull a quote here from the Father section of the book. As you noted, Father loved football. He dreamed of playing for my team, the Philadelphia Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. But he closes the chapter with this. Quote, "I thank God to this day that I did not play football, because in this world there are so many distractions from God. American football was a distraction for me. Priesthood, on the other hand, is life for me and life to the fullest," end quote. Now, obviously, everyone isn't going to become a priest, but there is real gold buried in those two lines that are in that chapter, and that is that the world's full of distractions. What can we do to be like Father Michael and push those aside and fulfill what our true calling is?
I think a major problem in our society right now is the lack of silence. I think the devil's in the distractions, and if we remember that, we'll realize that pull on us as human beings is very, very intense and made more intense through technology right now. So because we, at the click of a button, at a YouTube video, a text, a this or that, God is trying to reach us, and he has beautiful plans for all of our lives, no matter what we've done in the past. It doesn't matter. He's got a beautiful plan from today forward. But if we wake up and instead of praying in silence for at least 5 minutes, I mean, better yet, a half hour, if we don't give him any time, if what we first do when we wake up is check our cell phone, and if what we do before we go to bed is watch TV, it's not going to happen. Our life purpose is going to be lost because we spent our time being entertained or absorbed in the media and in technology and in all this stuff that distracts, or people we shouldn't be dating, you know, or obsessions or addictions. These were never God's will for us. And I think American culture is basically distracted.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So let's move on. And the next story you have in the book is of Father Rick Wendell. And Father Rick's story itself is incredible. By all medical accounts, he died and ultimately became a priest. So can you tell us a bit about Father Rick's journey?
Father Rick, Rick, as a child, was a real daredevil. I mean, this kid, he fought his friends with BB guns, and they played toss with fireworks, and it blew off his friend's hand. he I mean, he had broken this and that. And he would do bicycle stunts, you know, flying off of cliffs with a Schwinn with a banana seat. His mother was just trying to keep him alive. And he says, you know, his mother loved him, but he said, my dad would only tell me he loved me after downing a bottle of champagne at Christmas time. So he was a rebel. He did very well in school, succeeded at anything worldly he tried to do. He became so successful in the world that not only did he have many women, but finally settled on a woman he wanted to marry. But he had several cars, motorcycles, a waterfront property. He owned his own construction business. I mean, by all standards that the world gives us, he was successful. And he's 30 years old, and he suffers a accident, another one. I mean, his body's been through hell by this point, but a large railroad nail that he hammers flies up and hits him in the cheek. And his mom takes him, because he knew he shouldn't drive himself, to the hospital to get stitched. He gets stitched. He's fine. They stop by a grocery store on the way home from the hospital, and he stays in the car while the mom goes into the store. And suddenly he's not feeling at all well. His heart begins to race. He runs into the store and collapses. And what happened was the paramedics took him out immediately, but he had an anaphylaxis reaction to the anesthesia for his stitches, and he died. He was very healthy and just died. And so he coded, his heart stopped breathing in the ambulance. And he talks about what happened at that moment. He says, I can remember passing out in the store entrance. Then my next recollection is of lying on my back with a man leaning over the top of me, pushing on my chest, but I couldn't feel it. This didn't disturb me. I simply took note of it. So he's looking up at an IV bag. He's in the ambulance, but then suddenly his soul goes through the scene. He said, soon I was amidst this light. Intuitively, I understood that I was in the presence of God. I didn't simply think this. I knew this beyond and before any question I ever had. And then he talks about what it was like to be in this presence. He says, the most profound part of my experience by far was knowing that God is love. Never had I realized that I could be loved like that, with a love so perfect, so pure, so intense, so marvelous that nothing else mattered. My dad loved me, but he hadn't been able to express it because his own father had not taught him how to love, nor his father before him. I was the first child who leapt in my mother's womb, a child she named after her beloved father. Mom adored me and was the image of love in our family. Yet nothing was like this. I was in the presence of a love so intense that I didn't care about anything else. There was no need for anything else. This love was absolutely fulfilling in every way. A love that I had always looked for but never found. A love one would never want to be separated from. So, as you can imagine, that was the beginning for him too. And he ends up in Medjugorje, where he has what's called an illumination of conscience. God revealed to him all of his sins, and that purified him so much because he was going to go to hell. And he also had an experience of what that would have felt like. And he said, it's terrifying. He said that he chose hell without consciously knowing that he had. And he says, I would not wish this experience on my worst enemy. Because so he felt in his soul the complete abandonment and separation from God and others without the hope of ever being reunited. Mm. And so he ends up, it's rather humorous, he ends up meeting Jesus in Medjugorje, literally meeting the Lord. And so he's in this experience of standing in his presence, and he sees Jesus, and Jesus doesn't say anything to him, but he says, I want you, he communicates in his soul to soul, I want you to be a priest. And he says, wait a minute, I can't be a priest because you've got to be kidding. You know, you make those guys, you put them in good Catholic families, you have them come out of an altar boy shoot, and boom, they're priests. That's not me. I never thought of this even once. And he says, I want you to be a priest. And he says, wait a minute, I'm engaged to be married. The country club is rented. The dress is bought. Critical mass has been achieved. Not going back here. And then this is what Jesus says to him. And he says, and I'm the biggest sinner ever, he says, and we've just been through this. And Jesus says, I know what I'm doing, and walks away. So Father Rick, he couldn't be happier, but he couldn't have ever fathomed at that moment that that's what would make him happiest and most fulfilled. Mm.
Quite a story. And we're going to take another quick break. There's more to come. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life. Well, there's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. Couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, forming faithfulfamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger, and with us today is Christine Watkins. We've been going through her book of Men and Mary, How Six Men Won the Greatest Battle of Their Lives. And let's talk about another one, Christine. You have the story of Jim Jennings in here, and Jim is found guilty of murder. He ends up essentially in a long prison term, and he ends up transforming a prison to some extent. Can you tell us a bit about Jim's story?
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, if you want to see what these men look like, if you're getting curious like I would, there's a book trailer of Men and Mary. And if you just go to www.queenofpeacemedia.com, www.queenofpeacemedia.com, then that's where you can get the book and look at the trailer. And you'll see that Jim is a good-looking guy, and it's worth actually searching him up on YouTube, too, because it's fun to see him tell his testimony, because he's got a great twang to his voice. This guy, he says, I was a respectable convict. I was respectable. And the thing is, the guy is brilliant, and the way he talks is so hilarious. So for me, when I was writing this story, I would laugh at different parts because he's such a character. But he was convicted of murder, more than one. And he said, if there was a vice, if there was a sin, I was into it. And he sees a PBS show about Medjugorje. And it's in his cell, in his prison cell. And he believes. And he says to his cell partner, hey, looks like the Blessed Mother is appearing to some kids. And he said, you know, I can detect a liar. I can detect a con, you know, by just sniffing it. Because he said, as a man who's been involved in crime and lying, I can detect a liar. And he said those kids were, what they were seeing was real. He said they ain't faking that. So it convinced him. And he says to his cellmate, hey, it looks like the Blessed Mother's appearing to these kids somewhere. And his cellmate says, who's the Blessed Mother? And he goes, ah, this guy's dumb as an ox. Everybody knows who she is. And so shortly after that, he is walking with another prison inmate around the yard, the prison yard, walking in circles. There's nothing else to do, he said, in a prison. And suddenly he feels this incredible pressure within him and around him. And he realizes there is a God. And he's still walking. He said he suddenly had no control over his own body. It's like his body was being walked for him. And he said, amidst this pressure, he said, I understood at the same time the reality of heaven and hell. He said, I didn't see nothing with my eyes. I just suddenly knew these things. He said he knew that heaven was peace and love and happiness and all the things we hear about heaven being, and hell was eternal suffering. And this is what he says. I mean, it was ugly and there ain't no parole and you're there for the duration. So he sees himself in the light of God's justice. And he said heaven was before him, so to speak, and so was hell. And God was saying, you're not going to be forced into either choice, but the choice is yours. And he said, I'll grab that. I'll grab the heaven one. That's what I want. And every time he reached out for heaven, he would be repelled from that choice. And he got scared. He's like, why can't I reach out for it? And later he realized that he was trying to bend his road of hell to have it end up in heaven, and that didn't work. So God showed him one by one his sins and asked him, will you give this up? Will you give this up? Will you give that up? And one by one he said, yeah, okay, I'll give that up. Okay, I'll be good. And then by the end of this experience, he wanted to be good so badly, not for love of God, but for fear of hell. So he got so into religious activity that he'd go to confession, step out of the confessional and think, I think I sinned again, and want to turn and run right back in. So this is kind of a hilarious period of time, because he'd read what other saints and kids were doing, and he said, okay, I got to do penance. And he worked in a wood shop, and he'd put a bunch of prickly wood chips underneath his shirt, and he wasn't able to do his work because his hands were just sticking out like a scarecrow. And then, but there was a priest in the prison who says, yeah, you can cut that out. That's okay. And so what happens is he finds out that there's a newsletter in the prison about Medjugorje, and he starts to read it. And something in the newsletter has Mary saying, love the love that's in your heart and pray with your heart. Pray with your heart. And he says, I'm saying 15,000 Hail Marys a day, but still scared to death. And serving God in abject fear. And he thought, how do you do that? How do you love? How do you pray with your heart? So he asks Mary, help me do this. And one day, his heart is made tender as he's staring at his cell, his prison mates and the guards. And he sees, wait a minute, I care about these people. They're so lost. God, will you zap them like you zapped me? And his heart goes out to these people, and his heart begins to change because he begins to love the other and want salvation for the other. So he starts to really, really change and to love. And he chooses, there's examples he gives which are so sweet. Like he said, I chose not to look at the woman in the prison the wrong way, so I'd avert my eyes and I'd see her as a child of God. Or this man who was a troublemaker in the prison, he said, give me your muffin in line for the cafeteria. He'd say, I wanted to scratch his face off. He said, but instead I said, you can have mine. And he thought, what is wrong with me? And so he just became this holy, holy man in the prison. And not only was he behaving completely differently, he started a whole prayer group in the prison. And these men were praying, and healings and conversions were happening for those they prayed for. And Mary basically entered that prison through Jim. Mm.
Amazing, amazing stuff. So, you know, and again, like Jim's story there, the whole sacrifice part of it is what I found fascinating, is he latched onto that and he continued to do it, even to the point of, like you said, shoving the saw shavings in his shirt to the point of pain. You know, it's almost as if it would be nice if some of us would do that, maybe not to that extent, but to at least latch onto that giving up part and realizing the fruits of that.
Yeah, he really was living the five messages from heaven that Mary's asking for. He was doing Bible reading. He was praying from the heart daily, especially a rosary. He was going to confession monthly. He was fasting on bread and water on Wednesdays and Fridays. And he was receiving the Eucharist frequently. So that was the result. He did what she asked for. Mm.
So we keep mentioning Medjugorje throughout our conversation today. For those of us unfamiliar, can you tell us a bit about what's happening over there?
Yes. So Mary has allegedly been appearing to visionaries since 1981. And there's so much confusion about the Medjugorje apparitions that I'd like to clear that up and say what the church says about that, if I may. Do we
Go
have
right
time
ahead.
For that?
Yep, absolutely.
So also, this information can be found in the back of the book of Men and Mary, How Six Men Won the Greatest Battle of Their Lives. So if you want to read it in detail, you can go there, and that's available at www.queenofpeacemedia.com. So to give the history, under the pontificate of Pope Benedict XVI, the Vatican made an unprecedented move of removing the power from any local bishop of Medjugorje to say anything definitive about the apparition. So this power lies solely in the hands of the Vatican. So if you hear Bishop so-and-so said this or that, that's a null and void. That's just his personal opinion. That's not the church's stance. So Pope Benedict established a commission to study the apparitions, which met from March 2010 to January 2014, and that commission concluded overwhelmingly in 2017 that the first seven apparitions of Mary in Medjugorje were authentic. And the commission also recommended to Pope Francis that Medjugorje be an official shrine, and their report is now in the hands of the Pope. On February 11, 2017, Pope Francis appointed Archbishop Henryk Hozer of Poland as his papal envoy. And now Archbishop Hozer is living there. His name is Apostolic Visitor. He's a representative of the Pope there. And Archbishop Hozer, in December of 2017, shared the breaking news that the Vatican now permits official diocesan pilgrimages to Medjugorje, and that Medjugorje conferences should resume and continue. So this is straight out of the mouth of Archbishop Henryk Hozer. He said in a press conference in Medjugorje, "You, my dear friends, should be the carriers of the joyful news. Say to the whole world that in Medjugorje we can find the light again." So basically, we've got 38 years of Mary appearing daily. And people say, well, that can't be Mary because she's been appearing too long and too much. And she said in one of her messages, "I would like to give messages like never before." But there is also, the church likes to know that there's precedence for these things, and people like to know. People don't like anything Catholic and new, but this isn't new. I mean, Mary has done this before. In Laos, in France, she appeared for 54 years. And in Fatima, since she continued to appear to Sister Lucia in her cell, those apparitions went on for 88 years. And the Laos ones, many of those that have been approved, were daily. And then people say, well, it's taking too long, too slow in coming for a final definitive approval. Well, Champion, Wisconsin, where she appeared, it took 151 years to be approved. Laos and France took 344 years to be approved. So these, you know, and people say, well, you can't go someplace where it's not approved. And that's just not true. In fact, Archbishop is saying, please come. And not only that, the church decides, they look at how many pilgrims are there. Like when it came to the miracle of the sun in Fatima, can you imagine if she said, I'm going to do the miracle of the sun and nobody showed up?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, that happened when it was not yet approved. Mm-hmm. So it's natural and normal for people to go, and then the church looks at the numbers and says, wow, this is a lot. And in Medjugorje, indeed, millions and millions of people have been there, and the vocations, the thousands of vocations, the thousands of healings, the fruits are undeniable.
Well, thank you for that. And since this is your first time on the show, before we wrap up, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about some of the other books you've written. So the floor is yours. Go ahead and tell us what else you have out there.
So I was a big sinner, and people always want to read about my sins, which I've had to die to self to enjoy that. But my story, my conversion story, I was an anti-Catholic, anti-Christian atheist who was going to die from her sins. And my story is in my first book by Ave Maria Press, which is called Full of Grace, Miraculous Stories of Healing and Conversion Through Mary's Intercession. And that book also tells the story of five others, a homeless drug addict, a former stripper, a modern day hero who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And these stories are just unbelievable. This book has brought many, many people back to the church. And so that's Full of Grace. And then another book called Transfigured, Patricia Sandoval's Escape from Drugs, Homelessness, and the Back Doors of Planned Parenthood. Father Don Calloway said of this one, "Are you ready to read one of the most powerful conversion stories ever written? I couldn't put this book down." And he also said, "Everyone in the world, especially Catholics, need to read the story of redemption." And that, she's a friend of mine, Patricia Sandoval, an international pro-life and chastity speaker. She just spoke this weekend at the Walk for Life West Coast, and you can look her up on the Queen of Peace Media website as well. And so Transfigured, man, if you want to change, if you want to save the youth, and if you want to change anyone's minds around chastity and abortion, this is the story that does it. It's just undeniable. You'd have to be a turtle in the hardest of shells to not be transformed by her story. And so Transfigured and Full of Grace and of Men and Mary are all available at that same website that I keep repeating ad nauseum, www.queenofpeacemedia.com.
So I know you have something coming out soon. What's the title of that book and what is that one about?
So right now it's up on the web, actually, and in a couple days the companion workbook to it will be available as well. You could also look up Mary's Mantle Consecration, A Spiritual Retreat for Heaven's Help. And parishes are doing this all around right now, and it's endorsed by Bishop Myron J. Cotta. It is a wonderful way to consecrate yourself, your family, a parish to Mary, because you pray a rosary each day. You pray for each other. It's a communal thing if you do it in a parish, or you can do it by yourself as well. But you also do a little bit of fasting. You do a daily rosary and you meditate on a virtue or a gift of the Holy Spirit. And the meditations that you read, they just take 2 minutes a day, are people's favorite part. It's extremely moving. And miracles are happening. You got the power of the rosary, you got the power of fasting, you got the power of meditating and trying to live out the virtues, and you really can't go wrong. And then you consecrate yourself to the Mother of God. And so one woman, she had an alcoholic husband. He was just a mess. And after she did the consecration, he got on his knees, apologized to her and the family, and returned to Mass. So expect great things, expect heaven's help. And it's Mary's Mantle Consecration, A Spiritual Retreat for Heaven's Help is the name of it.
All right. So, Christine, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending with us. Any closing thoughts?
I would like to close with, could I close with a prayer?
Absolutely.
Okay. For the listeners, Lord Jesus, Mother Mary, I ask you to come to them right now. And if anyone out there is feeling a lack of hope, is feeling like they aren't loved, is feeling like they can't be forgiven, know that those are all lies. That Jesus loves you more than he loves his own life, that his mother would get up on the cross if she could and die for you as well. You are precious, and God has a plan for you. And if you feel called to read these books or the videos or anything on Queen of Peace Media, just spread this far and wide, because this is for you if you're listening, that there's a grace for you in just listening to whatever Jesus or Mary wanted to convey to you about your life and the hope that there is for your loved ones who you can pray and fast for, please do. And that any way that you spread through the media or through the written word, anything of God, great results are going to happen. You are a catalyst for the kingdom. Be brave, be bold, know that God is on your side and all will be well.
And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
BreadBox Media programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.